You have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something. Your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever.
Stay hungry.
Hungry. Stay hungry, stay foolish.
This is the E-Commerce All-Stars podcast, brought to you with heart by Nedimo.com.
Hey everybody, thanks for joining today's podcast with your host Brandon Moskwa. I'm live from a coffee shop, which those who've read Brian's book, my next guest here, Brian Eisenberg, a partner of Buyer Legends, those who've read his book, Be Like Amazon, Even a Lemonade Stand Can Do It, we'll know that it's a nice tie-in, actually, being that it's based, it's primarily based in a coffee shop and in a car ride between, I believe it's the father and son. So yeah, thanks for joining us today, Brian.
It's an honor to be here.
I love your book, first of all. I wanted to mention that. It was a great book. I listened to about 3/4 of it, and then the very next day I didn't stop talking about it. And it has some amazing points in it and some really interesting facts. And so I'm excited to have you on the show. But before we get into the book, I was hoping that you might be able to just kind of give a little bit of background on, you know, what got you started and interested in this whole area.
Well, that's a long, long story, as I've been in the industry now for 2 decades. My brother and I were doing some general sales and marketing consulting, and then we were working with a large multinational company, and, you know, they started looking at this thing called the web. And, of course, I had been online in the early 80s with a bulletin board system that I would go ahead and hack the code for to get people to go where I wanted them to go. So it didn't take long until, you know, we started being client-side in the mid-90s. And by 1998, my brother and I started the first agency focused in on improving customer experience and online conversion rates. And we went on from there to, work with all kinds of clients from Google and Chase, GE, Overstock, to companies that sell pig sperm online. I mean, just all a wide range of companies. And I also was the founder and chairman emeritus of the Digital Analytics Association. This is now our sixth book in the space.
I really was blown away with some of the tie-ins to some other people I've spoken to over the last little while. But the fact that everything, it was so customer-centric. It was just really, really well written from the standpoint of it's a nice conversational piece, and I listened to the audiobook version, and you just listen to it, and it's a nice flowing conversation, but there's such value packed into such a concise format that, I mean, I had to have my pen out and I was writing frantically. And normally I'm one of those people who earmarks pages, but I think I would have earmarked every single page. I was wondering if you could talk to us a bit about the book.
Sure. So this is a very different book than any of the other books we've written. I mean, if, people have read Waiting for Your Cat to Bark or Always Be Testing or Call to Action, they were, they were just packed full of information, but, much more like a traditional business book. This one is written in the form of a narrative. It is, like you said, we're in a car ride in a coffee shop with an older mentor and someone younger. I'm not going to disclose relationships. That's part of the mystique of the book. And there's business lessons that are taught and shared, looking at examples from Kodak and Walmart, then looking at everyday businesses, because everybody wants to talk about, the same, 10 brands. But we kind of wanted to give it a different perspective of businesses across the country, actually across the continent, everything from, 1-800-GOT-JUNK to, Spence Diamonds to, HVAC companies. I mean, really just trying to give a sense of, like you said, the four pillars in the customer centricity. And of course, that first pillar is the customer centricity. And it's the part that, for the last decade, it seems everybody's talking about it, But at the end of the day, even according to a recent Bain study, you know, 80% of corporate executives were asked whether they felt they were customer centric, and they all said, you know, or they asked 366 executives and 80% said they were customer centric. But when they asked those same customers whether they felt those companies were customer centric, only 8% were. So if it's talked about so much, and obviously everyone sort of gets it, why is it that most companies still are not? Just as a simple example for that, right? I mean, I think to kind of tie it in, this is not an example from the book, but like my daughter asked me, you know, she wanted to go to Lush. You know, they do like organic bath bombs and face wash and masks and all of that. And so I couldn't take her. So she went with one of her friends, and they went down, they bought some stuff, they bought a mask. And she's on her way home driving from the store, where she decided she wanted to open up the container, and you know, these hand packed containers of the product. And she opened it up, and it looked like someone's fingers will run all through it. Now, you know, if you go on Instagram and you look at some of their, you know, the items that people have opened up and shared, you know, they're packed beautifully and clean and smooth. And this one was really rough. So she said, okay, you know, she called me up, what should I do? I said, we'll give them a call. So she goes ahead and she gives them a call, and she speaks to someone on the phone there. And they said, oh, no problem whatsoever. Just bring it back to the store. Now, mind you, she's, you know, she's 25 minutes away from the store, but she's going to go and drive back with a friend to return this thing. They get back to the store. And now you walk in there, and there's a big sign there. You know, everyone's on this hook from Simon Sinek about why we do things. And so there's a whole sign in there. It talks about we believe. And right in the next to last one, says, you know, we believe the customer is always right. So great. My daughter walks in. She shows them the packaging. She opens it up. She shows them her friends as well. And like, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. This is exactly the way it's supposed to be. It just sometimes it settles this way. And it's like, you know, she just left the store about an hour ago. Where did she go? Put her finger. I mean, come on. So if you honestly believe, right, that the customer is always right, right? And this is something that someone's going to put on their face. So imagine if someone, you know, took one of the packages and put their fingers in it. I mean, you'd be bothered, right? And
of course,
you know, I had to go on Twitter for her to get it resolved, but it eroded the brand trust in her. Even though the organization believes they're customer centric, they'd probably tell you they are, right? But yet they encountered, you know, maybe an average employee on a non-average day. Maybe they were having a bad day, whatever. Maybe that was an employee who packed it and just felt, oh boy, I'm going to get in trouble for this. Whatever it was, right? It is a challenge. It all sounds easy to do, but the reality is, you know, the things that an organization, large or small, has to do to keep up with customers today is really, really intensely difficult. And it's hard work. And we have to have the right metrics in place, and we have to have the right, you know, technology in place in order for us to keep up with the speed and demands and expectations of today's customers.
Well, and that's actually kind of what I was going to get to as well. Is one of the things you mentioned is see the data that reveals your customer's reality. And so when you talk about technology, how do you go about seeing that data?
Well, you know, everybody's focused in on like the normal traditional, you know, internal business metrics, right? You know, our sales, our traffic numbers, all of that. But they're not looking at – so let's do it simple. Let's just do a simple retail store example, right? I think that's a very simple one for everyone to get. You know, we could look at how many people walk in and out of the store. But are they spending time looking at how long people are, you know, looking at the same shelves trying to find the particular size? Are they looking to see how long they're spending time to check out? You know, if they're ordering things from online, are they looking to measure how long it actually takes from the time they search for their product till the product actually gets into their hands and they start using it, right? I mean, that's the reality of the customer. That's what that's what matters to the customer. The customer doesn't care about your sales numbers, you know, or anything like that. And so you have to really focus in on the metrics that matter to them. A good example of this, we're working with a client of ours. They're a high-end jeweler. They sell very, very expensive watches out in the Bay Area. And their expectation was that their salespeople would respond to inquiries within a day, you know, or two. And while we were there at their offices, we pull out the Amazon Prime Now app and we place an order for something, and it's delivered within a half an hour. And we make the point, say, look, you know what? your customers who are here expect the fact, right? Their expectations are they can get anything within a half an hour just with a couple of clicks. And are you telling me that you can't have a salesperson respond to an inquiry for someone who's ready to spend $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 on a watch within 5 minutes?
Yeah, it's kind of a little backwards in a way.
Right. But that's customer reality data, right? It's basically turning it around and not looking at your own internal metrics and processes, but looking at what the customer expects and then looking for the numbers that helps us align with their expectations.
Interesting. Very interesting. In fact, just like your book. I'm going to become one of your biggest advocates for your book because, quite honestly, it just blew me away. I was actually quite interested because, like you said, it's done in a different format to most business books. So I actually plugged it in, started listening to it, and I was right off the bat, I was surprised because I expected it to be, you know, your standard business book. Here's what you do in chapter one. Here's what you do in chapter two. But it was so far from that. And, you know, you talk about different things like the unifying principles, right through to the four different types of people. And like we just talked about, but I was hoping that you might be able to elaborate a little bit on the component I mentioned before about, if you could say 10 sentences that started with "we believe," I thought that was really a unique twist on things. And I think it all tied into like how to write your own four pillars, so to speak, but not four in this case. But maybe you can elaborate and help kind of articulate what I'm getting at a little bit better.
Sure. So let's start from the beginning of the book, right? Which is, you know, when you start thinking about what Sam Walton, who's, you know, one of the greatest retail innovators of all time, believed in originally, right? That, you know, the associates were partners and, you know, and about always getting people low prices and you look and, you know, always to be leaders in innovation and all of that. And, you know, you look at where, you know, Walmart is today or Kodak, you know, Kodak's own unifying principles, you know, should have had them. You know, the fact that the iPhone is being, you know, new iPhone's being released, you know, this week, obviously, you know, we should be seeing Kodak components in our phones. Instead, you know, Kodak, who invented the digital camera in 1975, owns none of those patents because their own belief systems didn't allow them the agility to change course on their business. They just got stuck in their same operating patterns and it cost them essentially their whole business, even though they had tons of resources to be able to weather a storm, but they couldn't do it. And so part of what we go into, and tying back to the Simon Sinek thing, right, is when you listen to Simon Sinek's speech, you know, he talks about, you know, beliefs. The word belief shows up more times than why. And we really want to focus in on what people believe. My favorite example of this is Ken Goodrich runs an HVAC company out of Las Vegas and in the Phoenix area. And he believes, and you can go online, you can do a quick search for Gettle is the name of his company, Goettl. And we believe, and you come across his video and you'll hear a whole bunch of people from his company talking about, you know, how he believes everything needs to be tightened the right way and everything needs to be done right and blah, blah, blah. And so part of what he's done is he has all of his technicians trained to change all the screws whenever they do a service visit to bright red screws, right? And the reason being is nobody else uses red screws, so it's a little bit innovative. It stands out. Two, from a customer reality point of view, they can see, right, that everything was changed, right? Every screw is now red that was, you know, black or chrome or whatever color they you know, silver that they had originally used. They can see that was tremendously tightened up. It also gives their team a way to look from an optimization point of view that they've knocked out every single screw, right? That they've done the right thing for the customer. And so it's this one simple thing, this one little red screw that costs nothing more than any other screw, but it just makes him so much different, allows him to articulate without having to say it, it's demonstrating his beliefs to every single one of his customers. And it's why he has such a huge, huge, loyal customer base. Dewey Jenkins is another example of an HVAC guy. You know, same kind of things. Like, you know, they demonstrate their beliefs every single day. They don't even have to say it. It's why they don't charge people extra for, you know, for when they're open till, you know, till midnight every night to take care of people in their target market. You know, it's a whole different way. And by the way, they also, one of the cool things about Dewey Jenkins, they also have a Prime membership for their customers as well, which is kind of cool. Fascinating business to take a look at. This is a guy that, you know, is so enamored by his community that they've made him the marshal for their parades and stuff like that. But this belief system is what drives your hiring, you know, your customer service. It is the corner operating system of your business. And so, you know, if you haven't articulated this as a business owner, as a founder, you're likely to realize that you have holes in your business that are not tied in because they haven't been unified by these beliefs.
Right. But basically, as I think you guys refer to it in the book, as the unifying principles.
Exactly. You know, and what we've tried to do with the four pillars is give everybody, you know, a starting point for what today's operating system looks like. You know, I everybody's talking today about digital transformation and all that. And, you know, it's kind of as if, you know, if we were running our businesses and we all had the old Blackberries, maybe the Blueberry one. Remember the blue phone that everyone had, right?
Yeah.
Super popular. It was a great phone. You were able to get your email. It actually had a mobile browser on there. It was really kind of cool. And when we talk about digital transformation, what most companies seem to be doing, you know, and this is both large and small, so this is not, you know, aimed at anybody, is that, you know, they'll go ahead and they'll slap a shiny new case on it. And so instead of the blue, that maybe it's a bright, clean white. And so now it's digital looking. And then they'll take the screen and say, oh, you know what? Maybe we'll A/B test those icons. And instead of the pixelated black and white, you know, a browser icon and email icon and calendar icon, we're going to have iOS looking icons. So they're flat and they're sexy. And this is what people are calling digital transformation without realizing what they haven't done is they haven't really changed the hardware. They haven't changed the operating system underneath there that defines how the hardware works, at what pace it can operate on, how the apps work together. You know, can you copy and paste from one silo to the other silo, from one app to the other app? And unfortunately, Amazon has really set a huge bar of expectations of how businesses should operate. And we just wanted to put out there, and by the way, Amazon's the first person to leverage these same four pillars that we talk about. GE has been doing it for way longer than Amazon has. And this is all based on, you know, Jim Collins' Good to Great. But we're trying to help people define what that current digital transformation flywheel would look like to deal with today's digitally transformed customers.
Actually, one thing that really drew me into it as well was the fact that you tied in Good to Great's flywheel, because quite honestly, I've been a huge believer in, and I've just actually won an award with the company I was with once based on, it was, I forget what the award was called, but it was something to do with the flywheel and just generating that momentum. And so I thought that was a really nice tie-in in your book as well.
Sometimes we forget that, you know, really solid wisdom is still solid wisdom, you know, 15, 20, 40, 100 years later. You know, I still go back and tell people to read, you know, Claude Hopkins, you know, Scientific Advertising. It's still as relevant today as it was when he first wrote it. You know, real wisdom, truisms, you know, don't go away. They should be, as Ryan Holiday put in his latest book, you know, they should be perennial sellers. They should be going around forever and ever. And the one thing I know, and I know a lot of people look at it today and say, well, you know, how are we going to compete with an Amazon? And then I'm like, let me remind them that 20 years ago, you know, Jeff Bezos, who had to take 60 meetings in order to raise $1 million for his business, you know, so he's no superstar, wasn't super connected, wasn't anything like, very smart guy, not take anything away from him. But at the end of the day, he had the audacity to believe that he could out Walmart. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly it, really. You know, if you really get down to it, he had that audacity to think that he could do it. And, you know, and in some way, I mean, in many, many ways, he's doing that.
Yeah, and look, he started with believing he could be Earth's most customer-centric company. And that's what we started with, right? Focus on the customer centricity. That's the driver, right? And he knew that he could tie the data about people back to all their actions, right? Because their actions express belief. And he tied it to a single identifier, right? Whether it was an email or a cell phone number, right? And so it doesn't matter whether you're watching Prime TV or if you're reading on your Kindle or on the Kindle app or listening to Audible, they've tied all this data together to know about your behavior, to understand and serve you better, right? That's their driver. And that's what's helped them make such a dent into Walmart's business. And the fact of the matter is there are businesses out there today that you and I don't even know of today that will very likely challenge Amazon in the next 20 years if they get focused in on meeting the customer's needs. Amazon is focused on being the lowest cost provider. And lowest cost is one type of business. But there's definitely opportunities for those who are looking to sell a little bit more premium, give a little bit more service, to become truly exceptional, to become and be exactly like Amazon, whether it's in B2B, whether it's in publishing, or it's in retail. And Amazon has proven that the same four pillars that they've applied to, you know, the Washington Post, that they've applied to their cloud businesses, have accelerated growth. Because as long as you're customer-centric, as long as you're innovating and trying to stay ahead of your customers, as long as you have the agility to act on those innovations and then have the discipline to go back and optimize them, because you know you're never going to get it right to begin with, you can keep that flywheel growing and growing and growing, getting faster and faster and faster and faster and faster.
Well, I know one of the things about that flywheel too is it takes a little while to get it going. Once it's going, it just goes faster and faster and faster. And technology can be used as a driving force in that. In fact, I've built a number of companies where I call it using technology as the accelerator. But you still need to get it going, and you need to have your four pillars or what have you in place and that sort of thing. And I think that was excellent and well stated. One of the books that I always refer back to is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Absolutely. Amazing book.
I was going to ask you, I figured you must have read it or be very familiar with it, because a lot of what you talked about in the book just had some very consistent, not synergies, but parallels to that book, and a lot of what his teachings over time were as well. And that's why another reason probably it drew me in, because that book was probably on my top five loved books. And so when I was reading yours through, like I said, I talked my wife's ear off the next day about everything that was in your book and whatnot. But I was hoping that maybe you could kind of wrap up with any final words of wisdom, and then how people can get a hold of you.
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, you know, I encourage everybody to you know, get a copy of the book. It's probably one of the quickest reads you'll have. The audiobook is just a little over 2 hours. You know, if you listen to it at one speed, if you're you know, a regular Audible reader and you listen to it like 1.5-2 speed, it's well under 2 hours. It's 144 pages. It's available on Kindle as hardcover, like I said, audiobook. It's also now available in Spanish and Italian. And a Spanish version has a Kindle version as well as a paperback version. So, I mean, we've really tried to make it as accessible as possible for people. And it's a very quick read, and they can find all the details about the book at belikeamazon.com. But you can find my brother and I at buyerlegends.com. And of course, you know, you can search me, you can find me on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, you know, Instagram. I'm kind of a little bit all over the place, trying to keep up with other businesses and my customers, and trying to help them be ready to face their customers tomorrow.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Brian. It was a great. You gave a lot of knowledge in a short span here, which is something you do very well in your book. And like you mentioned, you can listen to that book in less than 2 hours. I wasn't aware that there's a 1.5 speed. but I quite liked listening to it at the regular speed. If I was listening to it at 1.5 speed, my pen wouldn't have kept up. So
that is the only challenge. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people, you know, complain that they don't like business fables. And, you know, I actually asked my Facebook audience during conversation, because a lot of the reviews kept bringing up, like, okay, you know, a lot of the business fables out there, you know, they're stuck on one point and they don't really go into a lot of depth. But the feedback that we kept hearing was about why people, you know, even though they don't like business fables, which now ours is not exactly a fable, but they really enjoyed our book, is because, like you said, there is a lot of depth. There's a lot of places that you can go ahead and you can, you know, research facts that we brought up and quotes that we share. So that it's not just a thinly veiled story with one little idea. There's a lot of ideas packed in there. So, hopefully, people can, grab a cup of lemonade and sit down and take some sips and enjoy the book.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for being on the show, Brian. Have an excellent day. And hopefully I'll run into you at an upcoming conference soon.
Looking forward to it.
You have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something. Your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever.
Stay hungry.
Stay hungry, stay foolish.
This is the E-Commerce All-Stars podcast, brought to you with heart by Nedimo.com.